Hello, welcome to Open Heart Surgery with Boots. I am your host, Boots Knighton, and it has been a really long minute since I have recorded, since I've released anything, and for those who are still subscribed and waiting, I appreciate your patience. I've shared a little bit over social media and in my newsletter what has been going on with me. If you aren't yet subscribed to the newsletter, be sure that you go to the link in the show notes for this episode and sign up. And then that way you can always be in the know about the next season, which I will eventually release. And sometimes I might share a provider that I am working with that's really helpful. You never know what nuggets I'm going to drop. And so do make sure you are not only following this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, but also sign up for that newsletter. But today I have invited my dear, dear friend, Melissa Brumstead Snyder, who I have known for what feels like three lifetimes. No, seriously, we met in the early 2000s when I first moved to Jackson, Wyoming. And this is Melissa's first time on the podcast. And welcome, Melissa.
Thank you, longtime listener.
And Melissa is a huge supporter of this podcast and all things Boots Knighton. And I can't imagine walking this journey without you, Melissa. It was Melissa's idea to help me record an episode just talking about the last, gosh, I think it's 8 months now of challenges I have had. And it's kind of interesting because Melissa and I have been friends for so long. And when we first met, neither of us knew anything about our hearts. And now we are both walking our heart journeys together, and I'll have Melissa tell you a little bit about hers in a second, but first, just a little bit about Melissa. She is a librarian ninja. She does libraries like no one else does libraries. I'm just going to speak the speak of 2025. And she is like top dog librarian for the Teton County, Wyoming school district. She works in an elementary school where it's bilingual and she runs the library there. Plus she has all these other appointments in the state of Wyoming. And Melissa, I could not be more proud of you. Not only that, you're an amazing mom and a wife and a dog mom, but you're also just a great friend, and I'm so lucky to have you. So tell us a little bit about your heart journey yourself before we dive into my update, because I think listeners will find it really interesting.
Thank you. Before I say anything else, I just want to say that friendship and community are the ways that I accomplish anything in my life. So in terms of my librarian ninja skills, that all comes from all the amazing mentors I've had over the years, and it's really an honor to serve the kids that I serve in our school district every day. And yeah, you've been instrumental in my heart journey as we've started to discover that there were some special things about my heart. And I first referred myself to a cardiologist because I had kind of infrequent but annoying tachycardia episodes. And I had an episode, I want to say in 2022, that had me and my children, because they were there when it happened, a little bit freaked out. So it didn't stop the way that other episodes had stopped, which was a quick trick. If you have tachycardia, lay down flat and breathe, like flat on the floor. If you don't, you might pass out and it feels really, really terrible. So I was laying down flat, which is my normal trick. And usually that kind of kicks everything back into its rhythm. And that didn't happen for like close to 2 minutes. And I think I was overheated and there were some other things happening, but in any case, that got me sort of instigated my desire to see a cardiologist and just be a patient of record. And at that point, I'd been told as early as my teenage years, when I was getting, physicals for sports at school, that I had a heart murmur. And I think I was diagnosed with mitral valve prolapse at some point, which I've since read was way overdiagnosed for a long time. But my first echo wasn't until I was pregnant with my first daughter in 2011. My provider is really wonderful. And she was very thorough in all of her work. And she said, well, if you have a murmur, then let's go ahead and get your heart looked at. Nobody at that time said anything about the structure, anatomy of my heart. They just said, looks fine, continue on, have a baby. I had one, I had another. In 2014, I had my second daughter. And thankfully, everything was healthy and great. But these tachycardia episodes were happening. So I decided I would refer myself to a new cardiologist in town. And when I first met with her, she came into the office and said, oh, so has anyone ever told you you have bicuspid aortic valve? And I said, I'm sorry, what? And she proceeded to sort of explain what that is. And since then, I've had kind of yearly echoes to monitor the symptoms and the, you know, kind of resulting issues that I have because of the valve deformity. And they've gotten a little better look at it to say, oh, actually, it's not totally bicuspid. There's partial fusion. So I have what they're calling a functionally unicuspid valve. Somehow it opens and closes well enough that I really don't have a lot of symptoms, like outwardly. I feel good in my day-to-day life and I can exercise and do my normal things. But on the inside of my body, I have a few resulting issues, which are in a slightly enlarged aorta. I have regurgitation and stenosis, which are, you know, really common side effects of a difference in the valve. So, you know, I kind of just found that out because I went for one thing and then found out another thing and then went through a whole bunch of testing that first year to try to make sure everything looked like it was something that could be monitored and not, didn't have to have an intervention. And so far I'm still just on that monitoring trajectory, but I do have a lot of questions moving forward and I'm relying a lot on you, Boots, to figure out how to get myself to more of a specialized medical facility so that I can ask the questions that I have and feel like I can really get the answers that I need in order to sort of live my life with this knowledge of a medical difference.
Mm-hmm. I really like how you just worded that, medical difference. Words matter. You've helped me with that, you know, just thinking about the defects. You hear about congenital defects, right? And it's how they phrase it at hospitals. But I'm learning that you have to be intentional about how you talk about yourself and your condition, and then also coach others on how to talk to you about your own condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. And that was something I wanted to ask you about maybe later on, just kind okay. of what's how it's most helpful for other people to talk to a heart patient, mm-hmm. just some thoughts for people who might have a family member or a friend going right. through something.
Yeah, we'll get to that. That's a really good question. And that, you know, it's interesting because I too have a bicuspid aortic valve and mine's not uni, it's bicuspid. And I just find that fascinating that here we are. We were meant to be friends. What can I say? Oh, and we both love books. Although you read more than me, I just keep them around. I mean, yeah. I still read, but you read more than I do. Glad we got that established. Yes. Well, and then you're getting a scan today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
I'm having an MRA and they put you in the tube and it can just give a little better imaging of the veins and arteries, I think, in your body so that I can, one of my main concerns right now is aortic dissection and mm-hmm. just not wanting to experience that. So trying to be proactive about like, what is the size of my aorta exactly? And an echo looks at it a little, they measure it, but I'm not feeling super confident in the measurements that I've seen in my echoes, mm-hmm. how they've been read for the last few years, because it changes. And I was told to sort of like, you know, it can be off by this many millimeters or that many. And I was like, but that can mean like, that can be very significant in my health. So mm-hmm. I would feel better. And we've met our insane deductible this year. So I was like, go for it to do all the tests. I would feel better just having better imaging of my aorta. It's something I did 3 years ago. So I think it's nice to have the baseline and then the comparison.
Yeah.
And also just, I mean, I'm an information person. That's my specialty. So for me, having more information just gives me a little more peace of mind, and it helps me form a plan, which for me and my mental health is really important. Like, I just need to have a plan. I need to have a couple next steps. You know, even if my plan is like go downstairs and have a snack, that feels good. So whatever. I'm hoping this will give some good information.
Yes. And I hope listeners are hearing Melissa. What I'm hearing is she's been proactive. She's advocating for herself unapologetically. Our providers work for us.
It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want this type of scan again, please. And they were like, well, we don't really think you need that. And I said, well, I would like to have the comparison, please. And I've almost met my deductible. And I know it's really expensive, so I'd rather do it now. Blah, blah, blah. And they said, finally, okay, we'll refer you for one. And then they put in the order. Then my insurance rejected it. And then it's been back and forth. It took 8-9 weeks to get this scheduled. So I'm glad to be getting in there, getting in that tube today.
Golly. Yes. Pretty well,
silly. You have to advocate, and it can be really frustrating.
It's so frustrating. And I hear that from listeners all the time and from all my past guests. I don't know anyone who has had it easy. Like, it's stressful enough to be a heart patient, and it's scary enough, and then have to wade through the system. It just shouldn't be this hard. Anyway, that's a whole separate episode. I do plan on recording an episode strictly about waiting for doctors. So stay tuned to that. It will be good. There might be cussing. So I just want to be mindful of time here for listeners. I've been thinking about my next season, which is upcoming, TBD on release date, but I've analyzed the data, and I have seen that 30 minutes or less, even a little shorter than that, seems to be the magic number for length for episodes. I would love to hear your feedback. You can always send me an email at the following address, boots@theheartchamberpodcast.com. I know I'm still using that one because it was like my original name for my podcast, and I don't have it in me to change that. So stick with me. Anyway, so I would love to hear what you need to hear in this upcoming season, what you want to hear less of. I know people are still finding this podcast, which is amazing. And I think I'm over 80 countries now. So I would love to hear from international listeners. I'd love to interview you. If you speak English, I'm sorry. I'm really only like English speaking. I don't mean to be exclusionary, but I can't be good at everything. Anyway, I want to know what healthcare is like in your country. So I would love to highlight that. But speaking of my own healthcare, holy crap. So stress is not my friend. And that also means good stress. And I started pestering Melissa about symptoms in like January of 2025. But let me back up. And I'm going to give you a fast overview of this because there's a lot of information and I'm just not going to bore you. But my husband and I, you and I are recording this in August of 2025. We'll release this pretty soon. We started working on our kitchen remodel last September 2024, and I proceeded, and I'm not complaining. I am realizing my privilege of being able to remodel my kitchen. However, what I did not understand was I've been misdiagnosed yet again for the previous 2 to 3 years, and I had kind of a ticking time bomb going on in my heart. And so we start remodeling our kitchen, and I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. I washed dishes and cooked meals in our bathroom for 72 days. I know. Give me a Nobel Peace Prize. But like it was amazing. We got to completely remodel our kitchen, like top to bottom. Lucky us. So it was a very positive stress. And my husband, in the meantime, also blew out his shoulder. He broke his back. He kept remodeling the kitchen because he's a special, unique individual, which is its own episode. And Melissa could write a book. But then as we are winding down our amazing kitchen remodel, one of my dearest friends from childhood died in her sleep two nights before Thanksgiving. And ironically, she was misdiagnosed, or actually she wasn't given the right information, and she had developed complications during pregnancy 12 years ago and subsequently 15 years ago with her two boys. And she had undiagnosed heart issues from that, because preeclampsia can lead to cardiac issues. And she ended up dying in her sleep because of it, because no one had an eye on it.
So tragic.
It is. She was 48 years old, and now her two boys don't have their mom. And that was not okay with me. And then my soul kitty cat, Molly, had a stroke in my arms on January 1st and ultimately died. And then we had a massive cold snap where just down from my house, it was minus 45 degrees one morning. I live up on a bluff, and so it was only minus 20. Cold air sinks, and so we stay out of that cold sink in the winter. But it was a hell of a cold snap. All of that was this perfect storm to then kick off what seems kind of a point of no return. I hope that ends up not being the case. But long story short, I proceed to go through the ringer with a local provider who wouldn't listen to me. She did do some testing, but I had to beg for it. No, you should not have to beg for testing. You are the consumer. You hire and fire your team. Same for me. And it was absolutely enraging. And I went through the absolute ringer with some unnecessary testing, some testing that wasn't asking the right questions. You can get a heart catheterization, but if you aren't asking the right hypotheses, you're not investigating the right hypotheses, you're not going to get the correct data that you need. And so they were looking at one thing, but that was so not even going down the right path based on my symptoms. And so ultimately, I got another opinion, and then that opinion was kind of wonky, and I found myself at the Cleveland Clinic in June. Melissa, did I miss anything in this overview?
I mean, you're being pretty nonchalant about how bad it was. You were suffering. You were deeply suffering, like physically so sick, texting me saying you couldn't stand up and wash dishes. You were really not well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of easy to look back and we start to, I don't know what that is psychologically. I mean, I think it's survival, obviously. But when you start to look back at your own story, and of course we all have some power and control over our own narratives, hopefully, and we can try to tell our story in positive ways that help us heal. But I think it's also important to acknowledge how much you've been through and just like how hard that was and still is. I mean, you still have some tough days. And we still don't have all the answers that you need. But as a friend, it was just really hard to watch you suffer.
I tend to gloss over the hard parts.
Yeah.
And it is survival, you know, it's just so bad. It's so inexcusable.
Like, well, and sitting in it isn't going to help necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. We do have our occasional pity parties, right? We celebrate those and throw those with intention.
But, yep. Yeah. Well, and yeah, to be more exact. Yeah, it was rough. I had blue toes. My toes were swollen. I couldn't breathe very well. I had to plan out when I was going to go upstairs in my house. My house is two stories, and it wasn't every day I could climb the stairs. So I had to be really like methodical about when I would go upstairs, what time of day. Did I go upstairs yesterday? Oh, I can't go up today, kind of thing. I love skiing, and I didn't ski. I tried skiing one day just on a beginner lift with a friend who was visiting, and I lasted 1 hour, and then I was in the bed for 3 days afterwards. And I would tell my local provider this, and I asked for a vascular specialist, and they just kept throwing heart failure medication at me and assuming I was in heart failure without doing the proper testing. And luckily I have a cardiac dietitian in my life who was kind of guiding me from afar about what to ask for. But yeah, it was scary. I couldn't grocery shop. I mean, I had no ability to exist beyond my four walls.
Yeah, massive yep. impact to your quality of life.
Yep. So that's why I had to stop the podcast. Like I went to every other week because I had to relieve and reduce all stress, good or bad. And so I love doing this. I love being the voice, helping heart patients have a voice, but mm-hmm. I had to turn inward. And so I ended up at Cleveland, and they saw me at the end of June, and I got to see Dr. Ziada, who I just adore. He's hysterical. Humor is very important to me. And he was pretty appalled at my care so far. And they said, I've needed a pacemaker for a while. He said it was very obvious I have endothelial dysfunction. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can go to read about that. We actually, that's a whole organ system in our body. The endothelial lining is its own organ system, which is just amazing to me. And mine is dysfunctional. And leave it to me, Miss Overachiever. Of course, mine is on the very severe end of the scale. I can't just like do it a little bit. I have to like go to the deep end. But I also have microvascular disease. And what's crazy is I have such a squeaky clean lifestyle, but it's just some of my genetics. I don't process nitric oxide very well. And so that impacts the endothelial lining. But I also have chronotropic incompetence, which is why I need a pacemaker. But the scariest thing was I went back in later July to Cleveland to see Ziada again, and he did a provocative angiogram, which is where they on purpose test it. They put a wire up in my heart in the cath lab, and they on purpose test my heart with different chemicals to see how my coronaries are responding to various things. Therefore we learned I also have coronary spasms, which are super dangerous. And where I had my original open heart surgery in 2021 to alleviate the myocardial bridging on the LAD, the surgery worked. It got the artery out of the heart muscle, and that was the right thing to do. However, the artery was so severely impacted by being stuck in the heart muscle for 42 years. I was 42 when I had the surgery, that it's never recovered. And the really scary piece is the blood flow through that part of the artery is so compromised. There's such a high gradient through there that is acting like an almost complete and total blockage. There's no plaque. It just isn't able to open properly. And so that's been the issue this whole time. And I've been telling a local provider, I think it's my LAD. I don't think it ever bounced back from that surgery. And that person would blow me off. And my intuition was right. I felt like I needed a pacemaker, and I asked for it. Nope, you don't need it. It won't help. And then Cleveland's like, no, you've needed one. And so there again, my intuition was right. And so now I finally have like the ears of this team. And I just learned today, just this morning, that I get to travel back to Cleveland in the second half of September and get both a pacemaker. It will be the leadless type, and then get the stent. And I'm on like a cocktail of medications now that have enabled me to walk for like 30 minutes or rollerblade for 10 minutes. I've not ridden my mountain bike a single time this summer. And anyone who knows me personally knows that is my absolute number one love. So I am very cranky about that, but I will prevail. I will get over it. I'd rather be alive than pushing myself and drop dead. So that is the synopsis. There's so much more to that, and I'm sure it will trickle out over the next few episodes, but I'm really thankful I have Melissa. I'm thankful I have a really good therapist, a wonderful husband, dear friends, my dad and stepmom. So yeah, what the F?
Ooh. Well, I have to say, like, as the side, you know, from a side seat driver perspective, watching you go through all of it, it was really, what do I want to say? It was legitimizing. It felt good for you to actually have some diagnoses that matched your symptoms and helped explain what was going on. Because when you were just going through it and being told, we don't really know, it doesn't look like anything is happening, and you're saying, but could it be this or could it be that? Because while you're laying there, you're spending a lot of time trying to help solve your own mystery, right? And it was infuriating to keep being told that there was nothing outwardly discernible, that they couldn't figure it out. And I just think that's inexcusable. It's a lack of curiosity. It's a lack of professional integrity. Like, your whole job is to solve that mystery. So I'm really grateful that you went to Cleveland. I'm glad that you have a good team there. And I know it's going to be a long journey, as always, but my hope is that you'll be receiving the treatment that's actually going to help improve your quality of life, and that you can feel like yourself enough days that it's, you know, that you feel that difference and you feel that hope and that energizing impact.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for that reflection. Yeah, me too. It just shouldn't have to be this hard. And I was told to stop researching, to get back in the gym and start pushing it, and that nothing was wrong with my heart, and that I needed to stop going to worst case scenario. Even when my toes were blue and I couldn't breathe and I was having chest pain all the time. I failed to mention all the chest pain. Yeah, the chest pain was unrelenting.
Chest pain, yeah.
Yep, and it was going up into my jaw. I went to the ER a couple of times and was kind of shamed for it. I had every symptom of a female heart attack. I later learned that those were coronary spasms, and that they can cause a myocardial infarction and sudden death. I mean, the ultimate gaslighting.
Yeah.
So, you know, here I am 5 years into this, and I would have thought, with all the people I've spoken with, providers, and I just would have thought I was done being gaslit. I don't know. It happened again. And anyway,
I mean, I want to say, like, for a provider to say, stop doing your own research, it's unhelpful. That could be true if you were not looking at good sources, if you didn't really know what you were doing with that information. But you've got a science background, and you have basically been an apprentice to your own health training this last 5 years, and you're, you know, qualified to be doing that kind of research and investigation. And you know, we have to be careful, especially right now in this information world, where we're getting our information. We can't just listen to anyone online and be like, oh, that must be it. That's the thing. You know, people are diagnosing themselves with all kinds of mental health issues and different things. It can be helpful maybe to hear that first hint, like what you just said about a coronary spasm mimicking symptoms of a heart attack. Like, that could be really helpful information for somebody. It doesn't mean that's the answer, but I think it's worth us bringing our own thoughts and knowledge to the table with our providers. I mean, you've talked a lot about how we're a team, and that doesn't mean like I just get to sit by while everybody else does everything for me. I do have a role to play in that team. And if I choose to do my research and I'm going to the reliable sources that you are always going to, then I don't see why you would be told not to do that unless you were getting on someone's nerve. And that's really how it started to feel, was like, you're talking about the shaming, you're talking about being gaslit, completely unacceptable in a medical situation and otherwise, but especially when your health and your life are at stake.
Yep. Amen. There's nothing left to be said about that. I mean, that's just how, it just shouldn't be that way. It just should not be that way. And if you're new to this podcast or you're newly diagnosed, I just want to make sure that you are hearing this and will apply it to your own healthcare journey. And if you're just listening out of like support to me and you have maybe something completely different, you still shouldn't be gaslit. You should still be honored by your healthcare provider, even if you just have a hangnail. So I just...
Absolutely. Let's take a moment.
You had some questions for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess one of my questions is just as a person who's been trying to support you through this the last many years, but especially this year because it's been really challenging. What, if anything, was helpful to you? And are there other things that you would recommend friends or support networks for people who are going through really difficult health concerns, whether it's a heart issue or something else, just to help provide that emotional support? What would you say? Does anything come to mind that was particularly helpful? And does anything come to mind that could also be helpful? If there was anything I did that was unhelpful, I also won't have my feelings hurt if you tell me.
Well, now's not the time to confront you, Melissa.
We can get into it. Another episode.
You have like five. No, immediately what popped to mind was just presence. You just came over. And you have a full-time job, two kids, a husband, a dog, and I live up a crazy road and over a mountain pass, and you still came over, even though you got stuck, got trapped.
For the record.
Melissa's gotten stuck over here a few times for various reasons, but that just means we get her for longer, right? My Jason. Yeah. Not only do we both have issues with our aortic valves, both our husbands are named Jason. Yeah. Anyway. It's just adorable. No, seriously, present. So I, like, not as in like physical present, just being here with me, bringing you would say, what do you need? What sounds good? And you'd bring tasty food. But really, I just needed you to come over and sit with me. Mm-hmm. And not to bring toxic positivity. I really am not interested in someone coming over and being like, but you can still, but. I don't want yeah buts. I want just presence. And ask me how I'm doing. Most of the time I'm actually doing okay. Like, my sense of humor is really in the gallows at this point, but I think I'm still kind of fun to be around at times. Very much. Yeah. I've had so many people say, hey, I'll stop by, and then they never call, or, you know, I will come see you this summer, and then they get wrapped up in their own summer activities. I will say that I love where I live for the most part, but the self-focus in this area and just the inability to like maybe ride a few less miles on your mountain bike in exchange for coming to sit with me is hard. The amount of people who tell me they love me, like so many people tell me they love me, which is amazing. Like, lucky me. But you know what? I think love is a verb. And if you tell me you love me and that you want to come see me and then you never show up, that undermines my trust.
Yeah.
And it feels really shitty. Feels profoundly shitty, to be honest. And so, like, half the battle, not half the battle, but part of this battle has been navigating disappointment while also being disappointed in my medical providers up until Cleveland. It can get lonely. And people will say, oh, you have all your heart buddies and this amazing community. I am still lonely. Even though I have Melissa and my husband, you know, it still gets lonely because it's really hard when people say they will, but they don't.
Yeah. Isolation is brutal. You know, as the person coming to visit, I know this about you, that it's really important to you for people to show up. And I also know that I'm not going to say I'm coming unless I know I can come. And there were a couple of instances where it was sort of a clear the calendar type of thing where I was like, I got to go today because she might be moving to a different location for treatment. We don't know exactly what's going on. And my wonderful husband would say, sure, of course, whatever you need to do to go support your friend. So I have a good support network too, which I'm super grateful for, in order to support the people in my life who I love. But I was really careful not to tell you I would come unless I knew I was coming, because I think that really sucks. I know that sucks. It feels terrible. So yeah, trying to provide companionship and not like a cheerleader, but someone who can just sit with you in the pain and the grief of whatever it is you're experiencing, or laugh at your gallows humor because you are very hilarious. What are some other things you think give you the like emotional resilience to keep going, to get up every day when you're not feeling well and say, all right, today I'm going to try again. Mm-hmm.
Drugs.
Well, pharmaceuticals can be very powerful.
Pharmaceutical, to be exact. Yes.
Are you talking about the ones that have been prescribed to you?
Yes. I've been sober 15 years as of 2 days ago. But that is also helpful. Being sober is really helpful because, I just have a lot of clarity. Not that I was like some like drunk or anything, but any amount of alcohol just isn't helpful for the heart or for the mind. And so I'm thankful that that just hasn't been a part of my life or my husband's life for 15 years. It's been really great. That's just a side note, just kind of a fun Boots fact. But no, in all seriousness, I'm on an anti-anxiety med because this is really hard. But also I just have worked a long time at my overall sense of well-being. And I am not afraid to say I have a great therapist that I've been working with for 11 years. That's because of a dear friend of mine who Melissa knew. She was murdered and I didn't have good coping skills for that. And that's where that started. So I've learned a lot of really great coping skills, but additionally, I'm so curious that I just can't wait to see what the next thing brings. And I just have such a mind of curiosity. And I know that this is happening for me, not to me. As much as I dislike it, I am leaning so heavily into it because I can see how it's making me a better human by the day. And I so enjoy taking it, passing it forward and helping others. But it doesn't mean I get to, I still have my tantrums and I still stomp a little bit and swear a few times a week. But I've learned that sports aren't the end all be all. And I used to think that. I used to be very extrinsically focused and now I'm very intrinsically focused and just kind of want to see this to the end and see like, what was this all about?
So your curiosity keeps you moving, which I think is a beautiful thing. You have a lot of tools in your toolkit, which is great. And the toolkit never gets old, right?
Nope.
Even when you have like the medical or the pharmaceutical assistance as well, that just is another tool. That's not the only thing. It's not the thing that makes everything better.
Right.
And I'm also hearing you say that your identity, like you had to, if your identity was really found in a lot of your athletic pursuits, you've had to really shift mm-hmm. who you are and what matters most to you.
Yeah. It's been a complete reinvention, a reimagining. It's taken a lot of courage to continue to live in my same community where it is so extrinsically motivated and figure out who the heck I am. And I'm still not there yet. I've been asking probably the deepest questions yet just in the last 2 weeks, because my Cleveland team has said they can't guarantee I'll mountain bike again. They can't guarantee I'll ski again, even after I get the stent and the pacemaker. They just can't guarantee that right now. And I'm probably going to have to leave for the winter. Actually, I know I am. And I probably need to get to lower elevation for a little bit. And there's just so much loss. And it's so easy. It's so interesting how people are quick to say, but this is where you don't yeah, but me. This is where I get to grieve the old me and why I moved here, what brought Jason and I together. Jason and I are having to reimagine how we enjoy each other's company. Thank goodness we have the coolest camper van, and we still love looking at plants and bugs, and like we love being outdoors together. But yeah. He knows he can't go mountain biking with me right now, and he's had to grieve that. Yeah. So I'm still in the grieving process, and I just need to be there for a while longer, because if I don't grieve this, then that grief gets stuck, and then that manifests as disease, and that stresses my heart.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm wondering, you know, when your identity shifts, I think it's natural that your relationships also shift. So I'm wondering if some of those folks who do love you, and they're not lying about that, but their only way of relating to you is in an athletic situation, skiing or mountain biking, something like that. Now, I have always known you in a non-athletic capacity, despite your best efforts to turn me into an Olympic level skier. I've always been a very okay athlete and have watched with admiration as Boots did amazing things. But now we get to like go to my level and kick it and eat chocolate cake together. And it's fantastic.
Woohoo, the cake's good.
And sometimes go for a nice walk mm-hmm. and admire the flowers.
Yep. I will say I love this pace in a lot of ways. I just also, mm-hmm. you know, recently I've more been mountain biking when my heart would let me, just to go look at the flowers. It's just a quicker way to get to all my flowers that yeah. I love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's What a ride. What an absolute ride. And I also just take the 50,000 foot view. I'm reading for the second time The Happiness Equation. It's mm-hmm. an amazing book. I'm forgetting the guy's last name. The book is not in front of me. Neil is his first name. Anyway, it really is kicking me in the butt in the right ways of, you know, how can we still live a beautiful life despite what's happening in our bodies? And he's not writing it from a health perspective, but just an overall 50,000 foot perspective, looking down at your life. And I really have so much. I really cannot believe how lucky I am. And I often say I'm the luckiest unlucky person. And what I mean by that is I can pay for my health care. I have access to really good food. And I can afford it. I do have a community. I'm able to buy my medications. I'm able to fly to Cleveland. Thankfully, insurance is covering it, but I still have to pay to get there. I can record this podcast, and I am able to like stay home and not stress my heart by going to a job right now. There's no way I could actually physically go to a job anyway, but I don't necessarily have to completely worry about that right now. And so I'm unlucky in that I have 6 different diagnoses in my heart, but I am the luckiest that I don't have to do this journey alone, and I have every tool at my disposal. How fortunate.
Amazing perspective, hearing you say that you both need time to grieve, but you can also feel gratitude in that. It doesn't have to be, one is not, you know, going to negate the other.
Nope.
You can hold all of it.
Yep. And I've still had fun this summer. Like, mm-hmm. we're finding joy every day. And to just finish things off, Melissa and I went to De La Soul and Diggable Planets. And if you were a child of the 90s, you know those two hip hop bands, and they brought the positive ruckus, and it was so fun, and I won't ever forget it. And I also saw Primus this summer, which I never thought I'd go to a Primus show. That was a riot. So yeah, like I'm, you know, we're still living life just in a different way. And I can still have my tantrums and grieve and be disappointed and also be grateful and find the humor in the most ridiculous of circumstances. It's all of that.
Well, you continue to inspire me, even though we're not on the mountain right now. We're not shredding the pow. I'm always inspired by you. And it gives me good perspective, too, to be your friend and to walk with you through this. And it's an honor to get to do that.
Well, thank you, my dear. Lucky me. Thank you for doing this with me. Thank you for helping me. I think we're going to do this more often if I can hire you. And for my listeners, thank you for listening if you've made it to the end. This went a little longer than we anticipated, but the conversation was important, I think. If you haven't, be sure to follow. If you haven't also rated this podcast, believe it or not, it actually makes a difference, and it would be such a great gift to me. So whether you're on Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen around the world, if you could give this, I'm just going to ask for 5 stars. Please give me 5 stars. I have a 5-star rating already, but can you add another? And I still want to hear from you, so send me an email. I love you. You matter. You get to hire and fire your team. And I'll be back soon with more updates. And I hope to launch the new season maybe in October, maybe sooner. We'll see. Okay. Bye for now. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.